Pop quiz. A photon has 6.6 times 10 negative 18th power joules of energy. Planck's constant H is 6.6 times 10 to the 34th negative power joules. What's the frequency of the photon expressed in hertz? James Kakalios will tell you not to worry about it, that the more important question is how this puts Captain Kirk in danger. His new book, called The Amazing Story of Quantum Mechanics, A Math-Free Exploration of the Science That Made Our World, is published by Gotham Books, and it promises to help us understand or at least appreciate quantum physics using science fiction rather than calculators. He's a distinguished physics professor at the University of Minnesota, served as the on-set science consultant for the 2007 film Watchmen. And James, I welcome you to our show today and challenge you to teach us quantum mechanics in the next 20 minutes, or even explain how something can be a point and a wave at the same time.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. Secondly, it would be 10 to the 16 hertz.
And, that's the answer.
Yes. And then
I have to take your word for it.
Trust me, I'm a scientist. And yes, I think I can explain quantum mechanics to you. We have 20 minutes, so that only leaves a problem of what do we do with the other 15?
Isn't quantum mechanics filled with paradoxes that seem irrational to anyone who isn't a physicist?
Yes, indeed, it does. Of course, that's not unique to quantum mechanics. Electricity and magnetism seems irrational. This branch of physics was discovered in around the time of the American Civil War. The fact that we live in a sea of invisible electromagnetic waves, that we only can see a very narrow slice in frequency, we never think about that, except when you can't get a radio signal or your cell phone reception. And so having weird, impossible ideas to account for phenomena, testing these ideas, developing their consequences, and accepting them if they turn out to be true, is what we call physics.
Well, quantum mechanics began in the early 20th century. What led to its development? Your first sentence in the book is that the future began twice, with the first beginning being in 1900.
Right. What drove the development of quantum mechanics was a set of experiments that could not be understood. This electromagnetic theory that I just mentioned predicted that if electrons orbited a positively charged nucleus in an atom, they should be continuously emitting light at all wavelengths. So you could just get a rainbow of light. But it was observed that atoms only gave off light at very particular wavelengths and no others. Every element has its own fingerprint of the wavelengths of light. This is how helium was discovered inside the sun, which is why it's called helium, from Helios, the sun god.
And that's how we can tell what different stars are made of as well.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So forensic scientists can use this to determine the chemical composition of elements, of materials. Why those particular wavelengths and not others? Why does the spectrum of light given off from hot glowing objects have the form that it does and only depends on the temperature? The theories prior to quantum mechanics were unable to explain this. So scientists suggested a new set of rules that would operate inside the atom. And those new sets of rules turned out to be useful for explaining the properties of atoms and how they interact with light.
You said scientists, unlike the theory of relativity, quantum mechanics is the work of a number of important contributors. Were they all working together, or were they all working separately and we're all working on related problems?
Kind of yes and no. There were some that were spread out and working independently. Heisenberg developed a model for the atom, and independently, Schrödinger developed a different model for the atom. And then Schrödinger, 6 months later, realized that the two, even though they used completely different math, were actually the same model, but just expressed in using different language, in essence.
So to some degree, to understand all of this, you have to understand math, because this is like looking at a painting and understanding what the images in the painting are. Somebody else might not get it.
Well, you could look at a painting and look at the image, and if it represents a scene from mythology and you know the story, you can get more out of the painting than just looking at it and appreciating it for itself. But there are different levels of understanding. My book is not intended to for people who are going to become scientists or engineers, but rather for anyone who's going to be a citizen or voter, anyone who's interested in understanding how this technology, the science, led to the technology that surrounds the world we live in and that will still continue to be developed. And in new fields of nanotechnology, quantum computing, alternative energy, we still are using quantum mechanics, and so it still continues to make the future.
Well, a whole bunch of different people contributed to it over the course of some time. Is it still being modified today?
The basic theory is pretty much set. There, people still argue about the interpretations on issues that can't be measured. it's a perfect theory in the sense that it makes very precise predictions for experiments, and when you do the experiments, they correspond to what is predicted. And when you can't do a measurement, like finding out where the electron is at a certain point, the theory gives kind of nonsense results. And so, but since you can't measure it, it's not that much of a problem. So, by understanding how atoms behave and how they interact with light, this was done in the 1920s by a handful of scientists, some working in Copenhagen together, some working independently. A generation later, scientists, mostly in America, developed the laser and separately the transistor. A generation later still, we get iPods, cell phones, laptop computers, television remote controls, magnetic resonance imaging. None of these are possible without the transistor and or the laser, neither of which are possible without quantum mechanics. These scientists are not trying to make devices. If you went to Erwin Schrödinger and said, "Nice equation, Erwin, what's it good for?" He's not going to say, "Well, if you want to store music in a compact digital format." But really, without the efforts of a handful of scientists, the world we live in would be profoundly different.
But we're talking about two different kinds of people. We're talking about theoreticians and experimentalists.
Yes.
The people who then look at the theory and say, "Can I prove this?"
Absolutely, which is, of course, the only criteria for correctness in science. Can you prove it? If you challenge anything in science, we're always open to the possibility that we could be wrong, but you have to prove it. And there are accepted criteria for proof. That's right. So the experimentalist, and I'm actually in my day job as a mild-mannered physics professor, I'm an experimentalist myself. I work in a laboratory measuring properties of semiconductors. There are those who work on just the pure theory. Science has gotten so complicated that we have to specialize now.
Well, Einstein said that he was just trying to, prove Newton to be right, and then wound up with all sorts of things that maybe didn't jibe with Newton. Did the same apply with quantum mechanics?
Absolutely.
But Newtonian physics works, doesn't it?
Newtonian physics works. What happens is, you mentioned this earlier, matter having both a point-like and wave-like aspect.
I still have a hard time with that one.
Join the club. We all have a hard time with that. But one of the predictions of quantum mechanics is that the larger the momentum of an object, the smaller the wavelength. You and I have a lot of atoms in our bodies, and so we have a large momentum. Momentum is mass times velocity. So even if we're moving very slowly or not at all, our momentum is still very large. Our wavelengths of these matter waves, whatever they are, is less than a trillionth trillionth of the diameter of a nucleus. So there's no way to measure it. There's no way to see it. But for an electron, which obviously has a much smaller mass, its wavelength inside the atom is about the size of the atom. So there's no way to ignore the wave-like natures when you're dealing with electrons inside atoms. And so that was the thing why you say, why is quantum mechanics so strange and yet the world around us doesn't seem to obey this? It's the same notion as that why is relativity, why do we not notice relativistic corrections? Because the speed of light is so fast that we never get to those velocities so that we don't have day-to-day experiences with them.
Well, things like that momentum have led other people, New Agers and people like Deepak Chopra, to see quantum mechanics as proving all sorts of things that the physicists don't always go along with. But is it because it opens up all sorts of possibilities?
Quantum mechanics is a very useful branch of physics, and apparently you can also use it to get oil from a snake. And so there are people who use some of this wave-particle duality and apply it, let's say, as a metaphor for other types of dualities. But it really has nothing to do with the science itself. It's no more to take like a personal philosophy, like let a smile be your umbrella, and add quantum mechanics to it to try to make it seem more scientific, makes about as much sense as justifying crossing your fingers when you make a wish by invoking math theories of topology or knot theory. So, yes, it's – but quantum mechanics is amazing enough just on its own that we don't have to apply it to areas where it doesn't really apply.
My guest is James Kakalios, K-A-K-A-L-I-O-S. He's the Taylor Distinguished Professor in the School of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Minnesota, author of a number of books, the most recent, The Amazing Story of Quantum Mechanics, A Math-Free Exploration of the Science That Made Our World, published by Gotham Books. And I mentioned earlier that you use science fiction as a way of telling the story. The cover makes that clear as well, because it looks like it's using the Amazing Stories logo, that magazine. Have science fiction people been applying quantum mechanics theories?
Certainly. Certainly a lot of the technology that we see in science fiction sometimes shows up in the real world, though in some cases reality has outpaced the science fiction. You would never buy a cell phone that could only do what a Star Trek communicator does. What? It only makes phone calls? It only calls ship to ship?
Or HAL in 2001. It was way too big.
That's exactly right. Back, it was understood that to make a powerful computer, you needed to make it larger. And in the early days of computers, they used vacuum tubes. But with an understanding of atomic nature of matter and solid-state physics, you get the transistor. And so you could replace the vacuum tube with something much smaller.
But what happened in the early days of science fiction? Jules Verne, for example, he didn't know any of this stuff. Was he predicting things? Was he prescient?
In some cases, he was. There's a lost Jules Verne manuscript that was discovered back in the late 90s that his publisher thought was completely unmarketable and had him lock up in a safe. And in this novel, he predicts what life is going to be like in Paris in the 1960s. And he predicts fax machines. He predicts high-rise skyscrapers and elevators. So in some cases, he was very prescient. Verne was very good at doing the same thing that scientists do. He took what existed and went out just a bit more. And we usually do just that. The few true geniuses, the Einsteins, the Feynmans, the Newtons, can go off very far and manage to find land nonetheless. But most of us stay close to shore.
Well, I didn't know much about physics, but it always bothered me that Superman, with action equaling reaction, when he leaped out of a window, why didn't the windowsill crumble by the force of his leaping? And if it was just a matter of gravity, why didn't he just keep on coming down to Earth, bouncing and going back up? Well, and when he bounced, he would be destroying putting at least a divot on the Earth.
Well, fortunately for the Metropolis Department of Roads and Transportation, that aspect of his powers wasn't usually represented. You're absolutely right.
But does it bother you when you see that kind
of thing? Well, yes. Sometimes it bothers me. I don't actually read comic books or go to these superhero movies with a pad of paper and a calculator and say, ooh, my physics sense is tingling. It's more like when they get something right, it's catching an inside joke. But you're absolutely right. In the early days of Superman comics, he could not fly. He could just jump great distances, leap an eighth of a mile. And this was ascribed to the fact that his home planet Krypton had a larger gravity than Earth. So just as our muscles and skeleton structure are adapted to Earth's gravity, so when we go to the moon, we can lift moon cars over our head and leap moon buildings in a single bound, which astonished the moon people. Superman's able to do the same on Earth. As time went on, he started to face more and more powerful villains, and his powers grew more and more. And eventually they changed the explanation and say that his powers derived from the yellow sun of Earth. whereas Krypton had a red sun. This obviously the shift of 80 nanometers in the wavelength of light is sufficient to let someone bend steel in their bare hands.
But is there any science fiction out there that really does have true scientifics, make true scientific sense?
Well, yes. I mean, to some extent, of course, there has to be some impossible element. Otherwise, it wouldn't be fiction if it was all completely using known technology.
Like being able to go faster than the speed of light.
That's exactly right. But then the good science fiction, good hard science fiction then says, let's allow this one miracle exemption from the laws of nature and then see what follows from that. There are examples. There was a Neal Stephenson novel back in the mid-90s, Diamond Age, that involved electronic books, that involved electronic paper. You would unfold it. It would pick up the Wi-Fi in the room and display the front page of the newspaper. And the only thing we don't have right now is that the paper isn't flexible, but that's coming soon. In 1914, H.G. Wells wrote a novel, The World Set Free, that featured atomic bombs and an atomic war that devastated Europe. 1914. This made such an impression on Leo Szilard in 1932 that he – and this is the man, the Hungarian physicist who first conceived of a nuclear chain reaction – that he eventually wrote the letter that Albert Einstein signed that convinced Franklin Delano Roosevelt to start the Manhattan Project. So a science fiction novel inspired the development of the actual weapons that it was warning against.
The title of your last chapter is Seriously, Where's My Jetpack?
That's exactly right.
Seriously, where is it?
The problem with you have a jetpack now. You could take a jetpack to work now, provided you only lived a few blocks from where you worked. The problem with jetpacks is energy. See, the science fiction writers back in the 30s and 40s thought that we'd have a revolution in energy when what we got was a revolution in information. It takes an awful lot of chemical energy to lift a person or a car up and off the ground. And once you're done with that lifting, there's hardly any energy available to go anywhere, which kind of defeats the whole purpose of a flying car. But information is limited only by our cleverness.
So we wind up with smartphones and with Blu-ray DVDs, but we still don't have a jetpack.
We still don't have a jetpack. I'm afraid not.
If you put a windmill on it, would that help?
If you're willing to have an unlicensed nuclear power pack on your back, then maybe but then that would make you one of the Ghostbusters.
James Kakalias' latest book is called The Amazing Story of Quantum Mechanics, a math-free exploration of the science that made our world. It is published by Gotham Books, and it actually explains a lot more than we have in the last 20 minutes or so, but we've given our listeners a taste anyway, haven't we?
Absolutely. And you could go to college for 4 years, or you could just buy the book.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.